Welcome to Zikur Daf Sin Mandim. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldar, and today we're in Masechet Shabbos, Daf Mem Vav. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, the Gemara clarifies the Malchus between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish regarding moving large menorahs that require both hands to move and small menorahs that only require one hand to move. They both agree that it's prohibited to move a large or small menorah if it's made of sections of chulios, out of concern that if it fell apart, one would come to reassemble it and be liable for the malacha of Maku Patish, the final hammer blow. They also agree that a large menorah that has grooves is prohibited to move because someone might come to confuse it with a large menorah that has sections. They disagree regarding small menorahs with grooves. Rabbi Yochanan says the Rabban decreed they should not be moved as well, whereas Reish Lakish says the Rabban did not decree that they should not be moved since small menorahs are usually made of one piece, so people won't come to think that a grooved one is sectional. Point number two, Rav Avi explained to Rava that the reason why Rava and Rav Yosef permitted moving a nafta lamp on Shabbos, even though nothing can be placed inside it because it became repugnant, is that the lamp can still be used to cover a utensil. The difference between the nafta lamp and scattered stones in the courtyard that can also be used to cover utensils but are nevertheless muksa, is that the nafta lamp has Torah's kliyola, the status of a vessel, and therefore does not become muksa as long as it can be used for some function. The stones, on the other hand, never had Torah's kliyola. They never had the status of a vessel and therefore are intrinsically muksa. And point number three, Abai pointed out a seeming contradiction in Rabbi Shimon, who permits the use of leftover oil in a lamp or bowl on Shabbos, but does not permit the slaughtering of a Bechorah on Yantiv, whose blemish was not detected prior to Yantiv. Rabbi explained that in the case of the oil, a person waits and anticipates the moment when his lamp will go out and he'll be able to use the oil. So even the oil is not available at Bein HaShmashos, it becomes permissible when the moment arrives, according to Rabbi Shimon. In the case of the Bechor, it cannot be said that a person anticipates the arrival of a blemish to permit him to eat it. Even if a blemish comes, who's to say that it will develop a permanent blemish? And even if it develops a permanent blemish, who is to say that an expert, a mumcha, will come to inspect it? Therefore, Rabbi Shimon says the Bechor remain muksa. So once again, the 3 points are number one. The Gemara clarifies the malchus between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish regarding moving large menorahs that require both hands to move and small menorahs that only require one hand to move. They both agree that it's prohibited to move a large or small menorah if it's made of sections of chulios, and are concerned that if it fell apart, one would come to reassemble it and be liable for the malacha of Maku Patish, the final hammer blow. They also agree that a large menorah that has grooves is prohibited to move because someone might come to confuse it with a large menorah that has sections. They disagree regarding small menorahs with grooves. Rabbi Yochanan says the Rabban decreed they should not be moved as well. Reish Lakish said the Rabban did not decree they should not be moved since small menorahs are usually made of one piece, so people will not come to think that a grooved one is sectional. Point number two, Rav Avia explained to Rava that the reason why Rabba and Rav Yosef permitted moving a nafta lamp on Shabbos, even though nothing can be placed inside because it became repugnant, is that the lamp can still be used to cover a utensil. He explained that the difference between the nafta lamp and scattered stones in the courtyard that can also be used to cover utensils but are nevertheless muksa, is that the nafta lamp has Torah's kliyola, it has the status of a vessel, and therefore does not become muksa as long as it can be used for some function. The stones, on the other hand, never had Torah's kliyola, never had the status of a vessel, and therefore are intrinsically muksa. And point number three, Abaya pointed out a seeming contradiction, Rabbi Shimon, who permits the use of leftover oil in a lamp or bowl on Shabbos, but does not permit the slaughtering of a Bechor in Yantiv, whose blemish, the moon, was not detected prior to Yantiv. Rav explained that in the case of oil, a person waits and anticipates the moment when his lamp will go out and he'll be able to use the oil. Even the oil was not available at Bein HaShmashos, it becomes permissible when the moment arrives, according to Rabbi Shimon. But in the case of the Bechor, it cannot be said that a person anticipates the arrival of a blemish to permit him to eat it. Even if a blemish comes, who's to say that it will develop a permanent blemish? And even if it develops a permanent blemish, who's to say that an expert, a mumcha, will come to inspect it? Therefore, Rabbi Shimon says the Bechor remains muksa. All right, so now we go to our siman. So the siman for Daf Mem Vav is a cow that goes moo. All right, so here we go. The cow, carrying a small menorah with grooves in its mouth, kicked a nafta lamp that was being used to cover a utensil, which then hit a Bechor in Yantiv, causing a blemish, which no one had ever anticipated. Once again, it's a motion. The cow, that means we're on Daf Mem Vav. The cow carrying a small menorah with grooves in its mouth, which reminds us that the Gemara clarifies the Malkuk's between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish regarding moving large menorahs that require both hands to move and small menorahs that only require one hand to move. They both agree that it's prohibited to move a large or small menorah if it's made of sections of chulios, out of concern that if it fell apart, one would come to reassemble it and be liable for the malacha of Maku Upatish, the final hammer blow. They also agree that a large menorah that has grooves is prohibited to move because someone might come to confuse it with a large menorah that has sections. They disagree regarding small menorahs with grooves. Rabbi Yochanan says Rabbanan decreed they should not be moved as well. Reish Lakish says Rabbanan did not decree that they should not be moved, since small menorahs are usually made of one piece, so people won't come to think that a grooved one is sectional. So the cow carrying a small menorah with grooves in its mouth kicked a naphtha lamp that was being used to cover a utensil. Which reminds us, Rav Avi explained to Rav that the reason why Rabba and Rav Yosef permitted moving a naphtha lamp on Shabbos, even though nothing can be placed inside it because it became repugnant, is that the lamp can simply be used to cover a utensil. He explained that the difference between the naphtha lamp and scattered stones in the courtyard that could also be used to cover utensils, but are nevertheless muksa, is that the naphtha lamp has Torah's kliyah, has the status of a vessel, and therefore does not become muksa as long as it's been used for some function. The stones, on the other hand, never had Torah's kliyah, never had the status of a vessel, and therefore are intrinsically muksa. So the cow carrying a small menorah with grooves in its mouth kicked the naphtha lamp that was being used to cover utensil, which then hit a bechor in yantiv, causing a blemish, which no one had ever anticipated. Which reminds us, Abai pointed out a seeming contradiction in Rabbi Shimon, who permits the use of leftover oil in a lamp or bowl on Shabbos, but does not permit the slaughtering of a bechor on Yantiv, whose blemish was not detected prior to Yantiv. Rabbi explained that in the case of the oil, a person waits and anticipates the moment when his lamp will go out, and he'll be able to use the oil. Even though the oil is not available at Beinu Shmashos, it becomes permissible when the moment arrives, according to Rabbi Shimon. In the case of the bechor, it cannot be said that a person anticipates the arrival of a blemish to permit him to eat it. Even if a blemish comes, who's to say that it will develop a permanent blemish? And even if it develops a permanent blemish, who's to say that an expert, a mumcha, will come to inspect it? Therefore, Rabbi Shimon says the bechor remains muksa. So once again, the cow carrying a small menorah with grooves in its mouth kicked a naphtha lamp that was being used to cover a utensil, which then hit a bechor in yantiv, causing a blemish, which no one had ever anticipated. All right, now it's time for our four blot back chazara. Daf Membeis. So the Simfer Membeis are mobsters, like the mob. So here goes. The mobsters, reminding us, we're on Daf Membeis. The mobsters like to throw burning metal into rishus of rabbi to scare the public, which reminds us, Shmuel said that one may extinguish a piece of burning metal that's in rishus of rabbim, so the public will not be harmed by it, but may not extinguish a piece of burning wood. Rashi explains that the malacha of mechaba, extinguishing a fire, does not apply to metal, since it merely glows. Although extinguishing metal was forbidden by the Rabbanan, they did not extend their decree in a case of potential damage to the public. Extinguishing wood is the malacha mechaba, and therefore it is prohibited in such a case. So the mobsters like to throw burning metal into rishus of rabbim to scare the public, and then eat their freshly spiced hot food behind the trash, which reminds us the Mishnah states that one is not allowed to place spices in a frying pan or boiling pot that were just removed from the flame, but one may add them to hot food in a bowl or in a tureen where the food has been transferred. Rashi explains that the bowl or tureen are a klisheni, a secondary vessel, and a klisheni einam avashel. A secondary vessel is not capable of cooking. So the mobsters like to throw burning metal into rishus of rabbim to scare the public, and then eat their freshly spiced hot food behind the trash, covering the eggs that were commonly laid. Which reminds us, Rav Chisda said, that although one may not place a vessel under a hen to receive her egg and prevent it from rolling off an incline, one may turn over a vessel and cover a newly laid egg so it should not break. Rav explained Rav Chisda's reasoning, saying that the rabbis allowed moving non-muksa items for the sake of a muksa item to prevent commonplace losses, but not for uncommon losses. So since a hen is likely to lay its egg in a trash heap, Rav Chisda permits a vessel to be overturned to protect the egg from being crushed. He did not permit placing a vessel under the hen to prevent the egg from rolling off an incline, since that is an uncommon situation. Daf Mem Gimel. So the Simfer Mem Gimel is a magazine. So here goes. The farmer uses Weiss magazines. That means we're on Daf Mem Gimel. So the farmer uses Weiss magazines to make paper bowls to catch newly laid eggs, which reminds us, on Daf Mem Beis, Rav explained Rav Chisda's ruling forbidding placing a vessel under the hen to catch his egg was due to the fact that it was an uncommon loss. Moving a non-muksa item for a muksa item is therefore prohibited. Rav Yosef provides an alternative understanding of Rav Chisda's ruling. He said, the reason Rav Chisda forbid placing a vessel under the hen to catch his egg is mishum to come vatakoy mehechano. By doing so, one is nullifying the preparedness of the vessel, since it will become prohibited to move it once the muksa eggs fall into it. So the farmer who uses Wise magazines to make paper bowls to catch newly laid eggs and little bridges for his birds at Beinu Shmashos, which reminds us, Rabbi Abao explains the reason why a braisa prohibits moving a basket that was inverted in front of young birds so that they can climb up and down on it, even when after the birds have climbed off of it, is due to the fact that the birds were on the basket throughout Bein HaShmashos. And Migu Diksa Tzaylo, Bein HaShmashos Iska Tzaylo Chuliyoma. Since it was Muksa during Bein HaShmashos, it's Muksa for the entire day. The basket is considered to have become a base to the Muksa birds. So the farmer who uses Weiss magazine to make paper bowls to catch newly laid eggs and little bridges for his birds at Bein HaShmashos was called out to help to move a corpse lying in a bed in the sun on Shabbos, which reminds us there's a machlokes regarding how one can move a corpse lying on a bed in the sun into the shade. It was said in the name of Shmuel that one should roll the corpse from bed to bed until it reaches the shade. It was said in the name of Rav that one should place a loaf of bread or an infant on the corpse in order to move the corpse. The Gemara clarifies that where bread or an infant are available, Rav and Shmuel agree it's permitted to move the corpse by placing the bread or infant upon them. Where they disagree is where there is no bread or infant available. Rav holds tiltal minitzad shmei tiltal. Moving something directly, indirectly, is deemed moving, and therefore rolling the corpse from bed to bed is prohibited. Shmuel holds tiltal minitzad lo shmei tiltal. Moving something indirectly is not deemed moving, and therefore rolling the corpse from bed to bed is permitted. Daf Mem Dalet. So the symbol for Mem Dalet is mud. So here goes. Old repugnant lamps were strewn in the mud. Mud, that means we're on Daf Mem Dalet. Old repugnant lamps were strewn in the mud, which reminds us the next Mishnah introduces a malchokas regarding the muksa status of a lamp. According to the Tanakhama, one may move a new lamp, but not an old lamp, because he holds a muksa machmas mius. An item becomes muksa due to it becoming repugnant, and a used clay lamp becomes repugnant after use. Rabbi Shimon holds one may move all lamps except for a lamp that is actually burning on Shabbos. He doesn't hold a muksa machmas mius. The Gemara later on will clarify that he prohibits moving a lit lamp because the wick and the oil have become a base of the flame, which is muksa. So old repugnant lamps were strewn in the mud along with cash in a bed that had been designated to store money, which reminds us Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav that if someone verbally designated a bed for the storage of money and then placed money on it, even during the week, it is subsequently forbidden to move on Shabbos even if the money was removed before Shabbos. If he never had used it for money, then it would be permitted to use on Shabbos. The designation alone would not make the bed muksa. So old repugnant lamps were strewn in the mud along with cash in a bed that had been designated to store money, contents which had fallen out of a coach that had a removable wheel, which reminds us, a mission was brought from Kalim that teaches that in a case where a wooden coach has a removable wheel, the coach and wheel are considered two separate items. Therefore, if the coach becomes tamei, the wheel does not automatically become tamei with it. Secondly, the wheel is not measured with the coach to determine if it has the liquid volume of 40 saw or greater. An object 40 saw or greater is considered too large to be portable and therefore does not contract tuma. In a case where the coach is large and serves as a barrier between a corpse and its contents, the wheel itself does not serve as a barrier and it becomes tameh. And if money was on the wheel on Shabbos, the coach cannot be dragged since the wheel becomes a basis l'davar aser, a base for a forbidden object. Daf Mem Hei. So the symbol for Mem Hei is Monopoly, Monopoly game. So here goes. The Monopoly game, that means we're on Daf Mem Hei. Monopoly game in the midst of the freshly planted wheat, which reminds us that Reish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan if Rabbi Shimon hold that wheat that one planted in the ground or eggs that were placed under a hen would be considered muksas since they were dachi b'yadayim, they were actively set aside. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that according to Rabbi Shimon, nothing useful is muksa on the basis of having been set aside, except that which is similar to the oil in a Shabbos lamp while it's burning. Since the oil was set aside for a mitzvah, it was only set aside for the duration of the prohibition of the mitzvah, meaning as long as the lamp burns. The act of setting aside the wheat in the ground or placing the egg under the hen alone does not make a muksa. So the Monopoly game in the midst of the freshly planted wheat came to an unexpected end when the barn dog ate the drying figs and grapes, not fit for consumption. Which reminds us, Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, that according to Rabbi Shimon, there's no food that is muksa on the basis of being set aside other than figs and grapes that were set out to dry before Shabbos and have not yet dried out completely. Rashi explains that once the figs and grapes begin to bake in the sun, they're no longer fit for consumption, and therefore Rabbi Shimon concedes that they become muksa. Other foods that are somewhat edible do not become muksa, according to Rabbi Shimon. So the Monopoly game in the midst of the freshly planted wheat came to an unexpected end when the barn dog ate the drying figs and grapes not fit for consumption and suddenly dropped dead. Which reminds us, there's a machlokas where the Rabbi Shimon holds that an animal that died on Shabbos is muksa. According to Mar Bara Meimar in the name of Rava, Rabbi Shimon concedes to Rabbi Yehuda that healthy animals which died on Shabbos are prohibited since the owner did not have a mind that the animal might die on Shabbos, in which case he could feed the carcass to his dogs. According to Mar, the son of Rabbi Yosef in the name of Rava, Rabbi Shimon disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda even here and permitted use of the healthy animals at Dan and Shabbos. According to Tosfos, the healthy animal was never actively rejected from being used for dog food upon its death. All right, now it's time for our pop quiz of 10 questions plus 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Here goes number 1. Which daf do we learn about the conditions for Chazorah? That's on daf Lamed Ches. Good. Number 2. Which daf do we learn about the Malchokas regarding moving shofars and trumpets? That's on daf Lamed Vav. Good. Number 3. Where do we learn that one can extinguish burning metal in a Rishus of Rabbim for public safety? That's on daf Mem Beis. Good. Number 4. Where do we learn about Yad Soletis Bo? That's on daf Mem. Good. Number 5. Where do we learn that one can put spices in a klisheni? That's on daf Mem Beis. Good. Number 6. Where do we learn about moving a corpse out of the sun in the Malchokas regarding Tiltul Menetzad? That's on daf Mem Gimel. Good. Number 7. Where do we learn the Malchokas regarding moving small menorahs with grooves? That's on daf Mem Vav. Good. Number 8. Where do we learn about the background behind the bathing decrees on Shabbos? That's on daf Mem. Good. Number 9. Where do we learn that a bechor that becomes blemished on Yantiv remains muksa? That's on daf Mem Vav. Good. And finally, number 10. Where do we learn about bad eating habits and their harmful effects? That's on daf Mem Aleph. Good. Now we go to the 3 bonus questions and brachas. Number 1. Where do we learn about the importance of learning with others and not learning alone? That's on daf Samach Gimel. Good. Number 2. Where do we learn that Divrei Torah, words of Torah, are not makabel tuma? That's on daf Chabez. And finally, question number 3. Where do we learn about the 10 requirements for the Kos Shel Bracha? That's on daf Nunav. Excellent. All right. So now we conclude our pop quiz. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldham Zichru wishing you a great day and great learning.